Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I want to make a little bit of an announcement to people that we want you to go and check out the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We're doing a little bit of a fundraiser to get me out of some very, very nasty financial trouble. So if you are capable of giving generously, specifically starting up a regular monthly payment into the Vinnie Eastwood Show, that would be really, really lovely. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for all your support. We have no advertising budget, and the success of this show is resting largely with you, the audience, sharing this show and the episodes and the videos from the Mr. News YouTube channel. I really, really appreciate it, and I can't thank you all enough. Now, my very special guest joining me today, hopefully, is Dr. Anne Blake Tracy from drugawareness.org. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Can I ask
you? Can you hear me okay?
I can actually hear you quite well, surprisingly.
Okay.
Okay, so if you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of a background about drugawareness.org and your involvement therein, I'd be really appreciating that.
Certainly. We started the group, gosh, a long time ago, about the mid-90s. And at first, we focused mainly on Utah, where I was living, because the use was so widespread here. And that's probably because they tested the drugs here first. There were several states where
and
testing
there, are you outside in the wind or something, or is the microphone too close to your mouth? We're hearing a bit of a breeze going. Are you there? Hello? Okay, we seem to have lost her. AFR, if you could hang up that Skype there, that doesn't seem to be working very well. We're going to have to continue this interview on the phone by the looks of it, having some very weird technical difficulties today. So sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. And I didn't quite catch anything Anne said there either, so a bit of a loss. Okay, so I want to talk about drugs for a minute. Now, I think the thing to take away from analysis of pharmaceutical drugs, specifically psychotropic ones, is that there are alleged benefits, but there are definite dangers. And the problem is, the benefits are touted a hell of a lot more than the dangers are elucidated upon, shall we say. Anne, are you there? Anne, are you there? We've got the Skype connected. There was apparently a fan on. That was the cause of it, but now we can't hear her at all. This is quite, yeah, aggravating. I'm really not happy about this. Okay, well, I'm just going to keep ranting until somebody works their stuff out and actually manages to unmute their microphone. And have you got a microphone little button there in between the little red hang-up button and something? A little thing that looks like a microphone with a little slash through it? You could probably click that and unmute your microphone, maybe? No? Nothing like that? I give up. Okay, let me just read from International Coalition for Drug Awareness at drugawareness.org then, because I wanted to get some a little bit of a backgrounder, but apparently this the technical difficulties today are making that completely impossible. We're getting a message now from the studio that she's back on Skype. I've seen that, but still no sound coming through on their end whatsoever, so it doesn't matter that they're on Skype and they can hear me, because they can't contribute to the program unless they unmute their microphone. It's a bit of a pain. So let's have a look at this. SSRI. Now, does anybody know what SSRI means? Serotonin reuptake inhibitors? They're antidepressant drugs, which in general have a fluoride compound, which are the main binding agent within it. And what's problematic about this is not only is it a toxic drug, but it's kind of damaging to your brain to a large degree. And we're still trying to connect Anne here. Anne, if at any time you can hear me or the sound of my voice, speak up just to let me know that you've come back with us. Now, I want to have a look at the first article on the homepage of drugawareness.org, and it's a video of a young teen who took a gun to school. First-hand account of a boy who could have been Adam Lanza or Eric Harris learned the common denominator in 68 school shootings over the past two decades as 16-year-old Corey talks about the day he took a rifle to his high school and held 24 classmates hostage. In order to get a glimpse of what was possibly going on in Adam Lanza's head on December 14 as he ran into the Sandy Hook school shooting and finally taking the lives of 27 people, watch this news interview of Corey and his father talking about the day he took a gun to school. And I believe I can hear you there.
Good.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is
Isn't technology great when it works?
Yeah, I actually say that a lot of times about my new computer. Every time I plug it into the screen, there's this little thing at the back of my mind. Is it going to work? Is it going to go away? I love it when it works.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank goodness I can forego my heart attack, my talk radio heart attack. At least they won't prescribe me SSRI drugs for that. So anyway, you're probably going to have to start from the top. And tell us a little about yourself and the organization, drugawareness.org.
All right. I started researching these drugs back in late 89, early 90. And put out a book on just a small booklet in 91. And then I did some really in-depth research and put one out that's about 500 pages long. First of all, in 1994, we reprinted it in 2001, and again in 2014. But we started the International Coalition for Drug Awareness in about the mid-90s. The primary focus is to address the world's most pervasive and subtle drug problem, which is prescription drugs. Because there's a period of time we noticed here in America where the FDA would approve a drug, and then a few years later they'd go, whoops, and pull it off the market. Well, in the meantime, in the whoops period, so many people were dying that we thought somebody's got to cover that period of time. And so that's what we started doing. And that's the main focus, is to try to get the warnings out to people before so many die. It's really sad.
Do you feel like there's a kind of carte blanche approach that can be had here, that if it's a serotonin reuptake inhibitor of any kind, regardless of your condition, there's probably other better ways to treat your condition?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, because when you look at the research on serotonin, what you're hearing is the exact opposite of what is true. Not that that ever happens in any other situation in our society, right? But anyway, when you read the research, you find that when you have elevated levels of serotonin, you have depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, mood disorders, it goes on and on, the list, headaches, autism, Alzheimer's, all of those are elevated serotonin levels. And you can find all that if you go to drugawareness.org and look, I think it's now down on the bottom right-hand corner. you'll find all of my testimonies to the FDA, and it is included in that. And they're not long. They only give us like 2 to 3 minutes to say anything. So
you
well condensed.
You get 2.5 minutes to counter how much minutes of drug company lobbying?
A whole lot. A whole lot.
Okay, you guys who are against pharmaceutical drugs, which are very profitable to us, 3 minutes. You guys from the pharmaceutical company, we'll give you a month, mate. Go for your life, you know? Just keep promoting it.
Yeah. Just keep the money coming from under that table.
Is not the pharmaceutical industry, just in general, for psychotropic drugs, the most profitable industry on Earth right now, apart from human trafficking?
Exactly.
I mean, and human trafficking does less damage to the victim, you know. I mean,
it is just unbelievable. I mean, I can't keep up with the murder, suicides, and mass shootings anymore. They're everywhere, and they're back page news anymore.
I was wondering.
I mean, when I started this, they were shocking to everyone. Not anymore. They just consider it part of society.
When was there ever a mass shooting where the person wasn't on SSRI drugs? I mean, apart from Iraq.
I might have found the one or two of them.
Out of like 70?
25 years now. Because we've got a database up at www.ssristories.com. .net. If you go to .com, I think you get a drug company, but I'm not sure where it goes anymore. But anyhow, SSRIstories.net, you'll find a database of 5,000 cases.
Specifically, why do SSRI drugs make some people go crazy and do these mass shootings, do you think?
Well, if you look at what we know about serotonin, it makes it really simple to understand. I mean, the initial researcher was in Israel, Felix Suleiman. And when he looked at serotonin, he found that people that could not metabolize serotonin, which is exactly what antidepressants do, is they inhibit your ability to metabolize serotonin so it'll build up. That's what a serotonin reuptake inhibitor is. The reuptake is the metabolism. So when he looked at those people, he found that they suffered from the mood disorders, the depression and the anxiety, headaches, pains around the heart, difficulty breathing, a worsening of bronchial complaints, which is why so many end up with asthma after using these drugs. Anyway, the list went on and on. Pregnant women would abort, and miscarriage is very high with these. So, you know, initially he saw that. Well, then we find out that serotonin is what LSD and PCP mimic to produce their hallucinogenic effects. So, when you take LSD or PCP, the brain reads it as if it's serotonin. So if you're taking a drug that is slowly impairing your ability to metabolize serotonin so that it builds up, what you get is like a slow fuse LSD or PCP effect. Now, anybody knows that LSD or PCP can cause this kind of violence. But, I mean, we saw moms kill their drugs back when people were doing those drugs. And by the way, they were both put out as assistant drugs. The company that manufactured the synthetic version of LSD for our CIA here in the U.S. Is the same company that introduced Prozac to us. So when they put LSD out, they got it. What they did is they went, Sandoz was the first company over in Switzerland to put LSD on the market. And they said, oh, this is great, because if people take it and they go insane, then we can find out what actually causes the insanity. Of course, they couldn't find anybody to take it. So when Eli Lilly put it on the market, they told everyone just the opposite, that it was going to cure mental illness and cure alcoholism and aid in psychoanalysis. That line of marketing sounds familiar at all?
No.
When our Congress pulled it from the market, then everyone turned to the CIA and said, well, what are you going to do for a mind control drug now that LSD isn't out there anymore, when that's your drug of choice? And they said, well, we'll look to the pharmaceutical company to see what they come up with in the way of a drug used for psychoanalysis that we can then use for mind control. And then who's the next one that comes out with the first SSRI in America? Same company. Kind of scary when you look at connections and see how similar they are. It's so subtle, though, because when you're gradually increasing the serotonin, it doesn't look like it's a drug effect. It looks like, instead, that you are slowly, gradually going insane.
So, let's say, I'm just taking a stab in the dark here. SSRI drugs were created specifically to make people go insane without letting anybody know that it's the drugs that are causing the insanity.
Well, it sure looks that way to me.
It sounds about right. That's precisely what I'd do if I was a ruthless criminal sociopath who didn't respect the human race.
And wanted to make a lot of money doing it.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Things like a car.
Why not give out a drug for depression that causes depression, because then they'll just keep coming back for more, right?
Yeah, I always said that. It was quite funny. Bro, I'm feeling a little bit depressed. Oh, why are you depressed? Well, my girlfriend broke up with me. Oh, that's really normal and natural, you know. You'll get over it. But you know what would be a better idea? What? If you take this drug right here. Well, what does it do? Well, it makes you feel really depressed and want to commit suicide and mass shoot people. Oh, yeah? That sounds like me. And it's just not that funny.
No, not when you go to that database and read those cases. Oh my gosh, it is just so sickening.
I mean, if you've ever interviewed
people with an incredible reputation just suddenly out of the blue turn into these raging maniacs.
Yeah. It sounds almost like a layman's terms description for demon possession. Yeah, take one of these. A demon will come along soon and possess you.
I don't think I have interviewed a patient yet, including atheists, that do not put it that way. They say, I felt possessed, and I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I couldn't believe it when atheists were telling me that.
I don't believe in God, but now I believe in the devil.
Really?
You know, it kind of comes down to that level as well, doesn't it? So let's take it a bit of a step further. Let's say the CIA didn't just create these drugs to you know what it is. It's a ticking time bomb justification device. So you pop the pills in to people all over society. And anytime one of them goes nuts and goes out and kill people, you can then play it up in the media or omit it in the media, depending on what you want to do. If you want to take people's guns, or if you want to pass greater surveillance laws or something like that, you use these justifications. See, look, here's this really bad, crazy person who we sold our drugs to, having one of the known side effects.
I called the National Rifle Association back in 1992, and I said, you know what, if you don't help me somehow get people to understand how dangerous these drugs are, they will create the violence, which will be the excuse to take America's guns. And here we are right in the middle of it.
And once the guns are gone, so is every last vestige of any freedoms Americans hope to have, right? And that's the lesson of history. Dictator passes a gun and not allowing citizens to have laws. Citizenry gets enslaved and subsequently exterminated thereafter until such a point as somebody intervenes and takes that government out, or the people uprise and take the government out. Now, here's the thing. It seems to me quite straightforward that almost all of the conspiratorial agendas and everything like that seem to tie together, but they always have multiple agendas with each individual kind of strike out, right? So SSRI drugs are one of the strikes that they're trying against the human race. And we've talked about this. We've talked about the violence, the justification for getting around the guns, suicides. Let me think about this for a minute. How painful is a suicide for all the families and loved one members? And what are they likely to do as a reaction to losing their loved one? Are they going to go up and try and attack these pharmaceutical companies? In a lot of cases, they don't, because they don't even know that it was the drug that caused them to kill themselves.
That's right. Especially there in New Zealand, where it's against the law to even mention that your loved one died of suicide. So how can you even bring up the fact that they were on these drugs when they did it?
Yeah, I interviewed the spokesperson. Scary. I interviewed the spokesperson of Casper, Maria Bradshaw, and her 16-year-old son, big strapping lad, just broke up with his girlfriend, put him on SSRI drugs for 2 days, and then he hung himself with a garden hose. He was her only son.
Yep.
And you can see the why she's continuing to fight against these drug companies, because...
Exactly.
Nobody else is there to
fight
them.
Tragically, what often happens, though, is they rush right in to get the family on the drug.
What do you mean?
The loved ones left behind after the suicide. When Columbine happened here in the U.S., all the money that came from United Way went to build a new counseling center. The kids who were victims couldn't even go pick up their mail unless they got it at the counseling center.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they know that it's just going to bring in more business.
Well, isn't that...
And they do it over and over and over again after 9/11. The prescribing just shot up. They rushed right in within a couple of days. Even offered free meds, considering they're so highly addictive. They got a lot of new customers.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of them collapsed at free fall speed.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's think about trauma. All right, so there's the media. Here's actually one of the most important elements, I think, with pharmaceutical companies, is that they're capable of advertising their drugs direct to consumers.
Yes, that's been terrible. Because, like, when I did the Lisa Gibbons show back in 99, that was, like, 2 years after, or not quite 2 years after they allowed advertising. And as we walked onto the stage, the whole show was on mothers on antidepressants killing their children. Because it was well over 90% of the moms that were taking the lives of their children were on an antidepressant. And so as we walked onto the stage to do this show, they told us, you can say the word antidepressant, but you cannot say the brand names of these drugs because of our advertisers.
So, whoa. So, when the show's on, they're like, these antidepressants are really, really bad. And then it cuts to commercial. Are you feeling depressed? Take a Paxil. You might be happy exactly. that you killed yourself with somebody you love. Well, hey, we need to make some exactly. anti-ads to this. Paxil, you might kill someone you love.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, is the reality worse than my jokes? I think it is. So, you know, people get offended when we're trying to make light of this. Like, dude, you can't handle this kind of information, this kind of reality, without a little bit of levity, I don't think. It's too painful.
It is.
It's horrific.
Really awful.
Yeah. I see all presidents going on about, oh, my mother.
I don't think many people are aware. I was the expert and comedian Phil Hartman's murder-suicide. And what these drugs produce often to cause these terrible tragedies is actually a sleep disorder. It's called REM sleep disorder. And what that means is that in a dream state, you have no paralysis like you normally do when you're asleep. Therefore, you can get up and act out whatever nightmare you're having. 80% of those people hurt themselves or someone else. They now know that 86% of those being diagnosed with this deadly sleep disorder are taking an antidepressant. 86%.
I heard a story about
never seen anything like that before.
I heard a story about a woman who had a recurring nightmare about her children drowning, and one night she woke up and she didn't wake up, she was still asleep, but she acted out that dream and she drowned all five of her children in a tub or something.
Yep. I know that's what happened to Andrea Yates.
See?
But that's what happened in comedian Phil Hartman's case. His wife, after she had already gone to bed, she got up, figure around 2-3 o'clock in the morning, grabbed a gun out of the side dress next to the bed, the little nightstand next to the bed. She grabbed the gun, shot Phil, and apparently the gunshot brought her kind of conscious enough that she was trying to figure out what just happened. She got in her car, drove over to a friend's house, and was trying to get them to understand that she wanted them to come back with her to her house and tell her if she had really shot Phil or if she was having a nightmare. Because she didn't know what was real. And she threw up 3 times, which is one way to know that the serotonin level's too high. It's called serotonin syndrome. She had several signs of it. Her speech was very slurred. But finally, they understood her and went back to the house with her and confirmed that she had indeed shot Phil and he was dead. And as they walked in the other room, she grabbed the phone in the bedroom and called her sister and said, oh my gosh, I shot Phil. Why would I do that? She was totally hysterical and said, there's no reason for this. And then she begged her to take care of the children and to explain to them that mommy didn't know what happened. And then she laid down next to Phil and shot herself. But you know what why she was given the Zoloft to begin with?
No.
She was writing a screenplay that she was getting stressed about finishing. Guess what the screenplay was about?
Somebody with schizophrenia.
Her husband in her sleep.
Somebody who killed their husband in their sleep. So it kind of like turns your imagination real. Well, isn't there like some part of the brain that is specifically there to help us tell the difference between what's not real and what's real? Like there's an actual barrier there. Like you'll think something, but then you go, oh, no, that's obviously not true, so I'm not going to act on it.
Right. And I've had people tell me that the dreams that they have are so vivid that they almost seem more real than reality.
See, that'll drive you crazy, actually. When you go to sleep, that'd drive you crazy, wouldn't it? If you actually go to sleep and the dreams are more real than when you wake up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know where you are, what you're doing with yourself.
Well, and that's how you create insanity anyway, is you repress REM sleep. You repress the dream state, and that's one of the very first things we ever saw with these drugs, is they repress the dream state.
Mm.
The brain has to have that. If you go without it long enough, it will force you into a dream while you're awake, which is a hallucination.
And this brings me to a very, very scary thing. Electromagnetic wireless radiation, EMF, EMR, that kind of stuff, it does the same thing. It makes it more difficult to sleep, and now we're surrounded with that stuff 24/7, cell phones, the whole lot.
That's right.
So the drugs are only one way that they're purposely trying to make us go all completely nuts.
Well, I believe that. I mean, as much money as they're making off people being nuts.
I don't know. If you look at the television shows or the movies that are coming out lately, you'd probably think, man, maybe even Hollywood's starting to be infected by this insanity.
That's why I quit watching TV 25 years ago or going to movies.
Yeah. I think I threw my TV
exactly
out.
What we're doing.
Yeah. Well, I threw my TV out about 2 years ago, I think. And when people are talking about the media, et cetera, I'm just like, dude, why are you watching it? Okay? Try and find something that's not funded by huge companies, that isn't on television, that actually makes you feel uncomfortable at the end of a broadcast because it tells you things that are true and very scary as a result. That's the kind of media you should be listening to.
Yep. I know when the afternoon talk shows started having kids on that were saying, I don't know what to do with my mom because she dresses like a hooker. I'm going, you get her off her medication. What is that? This is crazy. They wouldn't even have shows if it weren't for these drugs. Because I had so many women say, you know, I started to dress like a hooker and I started to act like a teenager again. And that's why you've got all of these female school teachers seducing the male students that are so much younger. They feel like teenagers again. Because I think I've only found one of those cases where they weren't on an antidepressant.
That's interesting. It's like the cause of so many social problems disguised as the cure for so many social problems. And then, of course, you get lumped in with those, you're anti-pharmaceutical. Well, I bet when you go get surgery, you don't want to do under a local anesthetic because, oh, you're against pharmaceutical companies, right? It's just like, dude, do you have any concept of humanity itself? You know, human suffering, pain, you know, loss. Those kind of things? Do you have any empathy for the human condition at all? I'm guessing not. Because you're not looking into, specifically, you're not caring enough to even bother to look into what's happening with these drugs here.
Right. Well, and everybody's been brainwashed about them. I mean, they tell you how wonderful they are and they do. Nobody pays any attention to that long list of all the side effects that they read. I just love the one about the the one for urinary incontinence. Sudden death. So he sits there and goes, let's see, do I want wet underwear or do I want to take out a cough?
Sudden death is one of those reactions, is it? You know, you'd expect that at a hockey game if there's a tie at the end, but just
well, and one of these drugs is what they use so often for that, Cymbalta, which is Lily's second version of Prozac. But they've given these kinds of drugs for years and years to little kids for bedwetting. One of the first calls I got was a young man in England that thanked me for my book because he said, I grew up thinking I was crazy. I never knew it was my bedwetting medication.
Mm.
You know, how many kids did that happen to?
No idea.
You know what serial killers have in common?
Bedwetting?
One of the things they have in common is bedwetting. So did they have the drugs in common?
Yeah,
I think we need to ask.
I think we probably should. Because, you know, what is this thing about being a serial killer that's so interesting to me? What was it? If you're a medical doctor, in fact, if you have the letters MD after your name, you're statistically 11 times more likely than the average person to be a serial killer.
That wouldn't surprise me because they're the ones that have more reactions to antidepressants than any other single group. In fact, when I did a news piece for news crew out of Russia back in 2007, they wanted to film me giving a lecture, so we hurried and put one together quickly, and there were a couple of psych nurses that showed up. And one of them stood up afterwards, and she said, oh, we never get to hear what you've told us here tonight, but I know it's true, because I'm on Lexapro, and I've had every one of those side effects that you've mentioned. And she said, but you don't know what's going on out here. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, 75% of the doctors and nurses I work with are on these drugs. You've seen all the cameras whirl.
Yeah.
I said, good grief, the way they affect your memory, how do you remember what patients need? She said, oh, we don't. Okay. She said, we just keep reminding each other what each one needs, and then we laugh and joke about how we're getting older. But she said that the drug reps are coming in and telling doctors that they're in a really stressful profession, so they know that stress is going to cause depression in the long run, so they need to get started on the drugs now. So they head it off, you know. I said, they're falling for that whole sales line. She said, I guess so.
Mate, I mean, why don't you just start trying heroin? You know, just like, bro, I might become a heroin addict someday. I better head that off at the pass and become a heroin addict today. For fuck's sake.
Yep.
I don't know. Have you ever noticed that when it comes to educated people, the ones, some of them that come across as the dumbest to me are in fact the ones who are educated in the pharmaceutical industry. You know, they become not like practitioners of health. They become salespeople, specifically authoritarian salespeople. It's not like, oh, I'm going to sell you this because it's really, really good. It's take this or else something really bad's going to happen to you. Oh, okay. Right. What about my informed consent? I've just given you all the information you need. And that is, I told you to take it.
Exactly.
You know, they're authoritarian salespeople.
They've got the black box warning and they'll tell them to ignore that. I'll say, oh, don't worry, that only happens to a few people.
It's only guaranteed 10% of the population that'll die from it. Bro, what are you worried about?
Exactly.
It's just this whole cacophony of it, and I've said this on the show like the last 3 days in a row, and it keeps coming up. The basic tenets of mind control: submission to authority, repetition, and sleep deprivation. What's your lifestyle like when you're a medical student? It is those three things all the time.
Yeah.
And we wonder why doctors can't see the obvious holes in their own teachings. It's because they're under mind control.
Really, it's sad. I mean, it wasn't too long after that show that we did with Lisa Gibbons that we had three nurses go to court for killing their children over a 3-month period, one right after another. Andrea Yates was one who drowned her 5 children. Then there was another one out of Illinois, married to a doctor. The other two were both married to doctors. One out of Illinois killed her 2 children, and then one out of California. So, and every one of them on these drugs. It's doctors and nurses and their family members. James Holmes, the Batman shooter, his mom's a nurse. And it's because they're taught to believe in these drugs. And they buy it hook, line, and sinker, and they put everybody around them on it. It's really a serious problem. But mainly among them, did you know that 60% of our mass shootings are in medical facilities?
Really?
Glad I don't go anywhere near one, even to visit.
Hmm. That is interesting. Are they, when you say they're in medical facilities, are you talking about they're actually like training to be a physician or a nurse or something like that? 60% mass shootings or?
No, not necessarily. Lots of times it's just patients, but you know, you put patients on drugs that cause suicidal and homicidal ideation, which means compulsive thoughts and actions of either suicide or homicide and various ways to do that. What do you expect?
Well, this is why...
I work a job like that.
Well, the other thing I want to know is how's this affecting veterans? Because I know that veterans just come back from, you know, killing small children and families and stuff and seeing people blown apart in front of them. And then they come home and they're like, oh, don't worry about that, bro. Just take these. That'll make you kill the people over here as well.
They don't have you wait. They're given the drugs before they even go.
Maybe.
In fact, I had a young man that I helped. His mom is a good friend of mine. And she had called me back in about 95 and said, this was right after she read my book. She said, oh my gosh, I think we've just had one of your terrible cases here. A little tiny town in Kansas. And she said, we just had the nicest man in town stab his wife and both of his children and then shoot himself. And so I contacted the family. The wife and the 2 kids survived due to her quick thinking. And, of course, the first thing they were offered in the hospital was Prozac, and she told them to put it where the sun doesn't shine. Anyway, the son that was stabbed was very close friends with my friend's son. And we even did the Geraldo show together and talked about what happened. And the kids said our father never even raised a hand to us the whole time he was raising us, and they were teenagers when this happened. And they said he was not a violent man at all. And what happened, just the in the last 2 years, my friend's son, who watched all this, watched his friend go through this, knew it was the drugs that caused it. His own father was a social worker that was against these drugs. He got ready to go to Iraq. And he actually came to his dad and said, "Look, Dad, they're telling me I really need to take these drugs if I'm going to go to Iraq. Otherwise, I won't be able to handle it." And he said, "What do I do?" Could you believe he would even ask? I mean, that has to be a whole lot of pressure after seeing what he had seen in his life already. Luckily, his dad just said, "Look, son, you're going to be carrying a gun, and you want your head working." So he told him not to take him. But just before he finished up, they ended up giving him some of these drugs for a problem with a knee. And he ended up with homicidal ideation. Got in trouble. They told him if he had that again, they were going to arrest him. Even though they diagnosed him with the homicidal ideation from the drug. So no, it's really a massive, massive problem in the military. That's why we got so many suicides among the military.
So it's not necessarily what they're seeing and what they're doing over there. It's actually the drugs they're being given by their own commanders.
Right. And that's why we've had mass shootings over there. There was the fellow that went off standing in line at some kind of health center over there and killed like 4 or 5 of his fellow soldiers. I'm trying to remember his name. He was from Texas. Anyway. That's on the list. You can find all of these on the list I gave you at SSRAstories.net. But then there was also the fellow, he was on antidepressants. There was also the fellow that went in and shot all of those people for no reason in Afghanistan. Remember that? Bales was his name.
I don't know. I don't know about you, but I thought somebody killing a whole bunch of people for no reason in Afghanistan was just called a Tuesday.
Yeah, Ripley. No, he just went out in the middle of the night and killed a whole bunch of people, just citizens, for absolutely no reason.
Is this, let's say that there's some kind of...
He and his wife both were on them.
Let's say there's some kind of satanic agenda or something like that. Do you believe in that? That the elites believe in dark magic and stuff like that, and they're trying to like offer some kind of blood sacrifice?
I don't know. With what I see them do, it wouldn't surprise me. That's pretty sick. And how I don't know how people live. I don't know how they sleep at night. How can they know this? I actually asked one of their attorneys once, and he said, "Oh, they just kind of like categorize it. This is what they do at work, and this is what they do at home." I'm going, "You got to be kidding me."
What does he do? He just kisses his wife and just goes, "Goodbye, honey. I'm here to make sure a whole bunch of people who committed suicide don't get family compensation or anything for the drugs that I represent that killed them."
Yeah.
Exactly. "Okay, have a nice day.
If I don't."
"Make sure you bring the kids back a Twinkie or something like that. In fact, honey, can you give me some sample packets of Zoloft? I'm feeling like I'm too happy and I actually have a life worth living. I need to change that immediately." Fucking instant.
Yeah, exactly. No, and then if you look even further, you find Dr. John Verapin, and you'll find that on our site too at drugawareness.org, who was the man in charge in Sweden for Eli Lilly, when they called him and said, we need Prozac approved in Sweden, because Sweden has really strict guidelines for these drugs. And if we can get this passed in Sweden, the other countries will approve it without any hassle. And he said, how do I do that? They said, any way you can get it done is fine with us.
Any illegal bribed, and legal means, as long as you don't get caught.
Yeah. He bribed the guy. Got to know him really well. Asked him what it would take to get it approved. And the guy said money. And he called the company. And they said, okay, find out what he wants. And he has come out speaking out. He says that he's responsible for a lot of deaths and these people haunt him. So he's come forward and talked about it. We've got Dr. Candace Perch, whose discovery of this binding process of the receptors to cause the serotonin to build up. She came out in 97 and became a member of our board and started testifying against the drug. She called them monsters that she wished she had never been involved in their development. And how many patients know any of this? They don't. They're not told that. Do they know these companies hid the studies for 20 years? Even from our FDA, and when they finally came out, they hit all the negative studies and just submitted the positive ones. When they all came out and it was evaluated, they found that the drugs don't do any more good than taking a placebo. And yet, they're causing suicide, homicide, and that's not reason to pull them from the market. Sounds like a pretty poor risk-to-benefit ratio to me.
Well, you were talking before about how could these people do this, how can they sleep at night, and, you know, it just seems to me like if you don't have a conscience, you wouldn't have a problem sleeping at night, you know, just head hits the pillow. And they kill some small children when they wake up.
Well, maybe they think
I'm going to destroy some families in the entire country. You know, it's pretty much how it is. And the problem with people who have a conscience is they don't know how people who don't have a conscience think. Because they don't think like we do, right? They don't have the same justifications that we need. Is it going to do harm to people? Yep. Well, why wouldn't I? Is it going to destroy society or the very fabric that binds humanity together? Yeah.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't I? Am I going to feel bad about it? No. Why would I? I'm getting a hell of a lot of money that I can spend on hookers and blow, and I can bribe the authorities who might bring me to justice. What's wrong with that? You know? I don't understand. This is what I can get away with, so obviously it's fucking permissible, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Sorry about the F-bombs there. We are allowed to do this on this network just when it's appropriate. Dr. Anne Blake Tracy is my very special guest, and we will be right back after the break. And we're back. It's hour number two, ladies and gentlemen, with my very special guest, Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, and we've been talking about, it seems that we go over the same areas, don't we? Suicide, murder, mass shooting, suicide, murder, kids, adults, soldiers, whoever it may be. And what I wanted to get into this hour is specifically the mechanism by which these things are kept concealed and continue to be promoted and done so rather successfully. How exactly can you kill this many people and get away with it? What's the mechanism? How are they disinforming the public? How are they brainwashing the medical institutions? How are they doing this, that, and the other, the whole apparatus of keeping this under wraps, even though the damage is so blatant?
It's really simple when you go back and read some of the memos that have been introduced in the courtroom in these cases. Eli Lilly, when approached by their own scientists, saying, we got a problem here because Prozac is actually causing suicide. They said, whoa, wait a minute, we got too much into this drug. We can't afford to lose it. So you're going to have to tell them it's their underlying depression causing the suicide. And all the other companies have used it very successfully. That's why you hear so much about mental illness. Mental illness this, a mental illness that. They blame it on the patient.
Is it that simple?
That simple. That's what they, well, there's a little more to it than that. They wine and dine judges, and they've gone in and drugged just about everybody they could think of to drug so that they're all defending the drugs because they're afraid to lose them because the withdrawal is so horrible. If you don't know how to come off of these drugs the right way, you're going to be in big time trouble. And it will open the gates of hell.
I would also like to direct people to the website drugawareness.org. And if you scroll down to the bottom, the very bottom of the page, on the bottom right-hand side, there's a little CD or MP3 that you can download. Help, I can't get off my antidepressant.
Right. That'll go for about how they screwed up with the drugs, how you need to do it safely. It took years to figure that out. A lot of And then you also what things you can use to help rebuild you can't use after these drugs.
How long a process is it? Because I've heard that some people may take like up to 18 months to wean themselves off these drugs safely.
Oh, it can be longer than that. It all depends on how long you've been on them. We found that to do it safely, if you've been on short term, say a year or less, on a time to come off.
So it's very
even
similar
if you've
to
been
the
on 2-3 years, half the amount of time.
So it's similar to the relationship principle. For however long you've been in a relationship, you need to be single for half as long as that in order to get over it.
Really? That I hadn't heard. I'll keep that in mind.
Well, maybe because people are having a relationship with their drug. It's like a member of the family.
Exactly. But you've got to come really, really slowly. And you need to know what you're dealing with. You need to know what the drug's done to the body so that you know what's going on. Like, for one thing, they really screw up your blood sugar, and it's really hard to balance the blood sugar during the withdrawal and even after being on the drugs for a while, even after you're completely off. So you need to know what things we know about that will help to balance that sugar level to get you through this. Because the sugar level drops, you can go manic. You can have all kinds of things happen. And that you immediately begin to lose brain cells when the sugar drops. It's really critical to brain function. The brain cannot function without normal blood sugar levels. So that's just one of the things. And that's also why people will crave alcohol on the drug, and even more so in the withdrawal. That's the first thing I saw sitting in Utah, surrounded by teetotaling Mormons that had never touched alcohol, and yet he gave them Prozac or Zoloft or Paxil, and they were alcoholics tonight. Going, whoa, what's going on here? And I thought somebody would care that we were creating that many new alcoholics, but...
Well, I'm sure the alcohol companies care, and they're quite supportive of it.
Yeah.
Whoever's making money off it, they support it.
Yeah.
Whoever's been damaged by it, they don't support it. It seems pretty straightforward split here. Is there some kind of psychological schism that's happening in the American public, considering so many of them are on the drugs?
Oh gosh, everything is going on. It's just crazy what's going on here. I mean, I stood back and just kind of watched what was happening with society. Like here in Utah, within a 7-year period, they went from the lowest divorce rate in the nation to over the national average. Bankruptcy rate skyrocketed. Had one fellow tell me that while on Prozac, he went through $2 million. Every penny he had was gone. Because you go manic, you go on these wild spending sprees. One woman told me that her husband went out and bought a yacht, and they came home the next night and he looked at the boat and said, "Hey, wow, that's a nice boat. I wonder whose it is." Didn't even remember buying it.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Well, I also had another young girl. I was just traveling and stopped at the north rim of the Grand Canyon. There was a little gift shop. That's a long drive, so I got out, walked around for a while, and found a little trinket for somebody and went up to check out. The girl behind the counter saw a button I was wearing that said, "Just say no to Prozac." And she immediately fixed on that button and just glared. I thought she was going to stare a hole right through my shoulder. But she said, "Prozac, I hate that drug. I was on it my first year of college, and I have no memory of anything that happened that year." And there's this long line behind me. I thought, ooh, let's try to. She was, oh, man, was she upset. So I tried to calm it down a little, and I said, "Wow, that sounds like a real waste of tuition money." She wasn't laughing at all. Right, I can't imagine having a whole year of your life gone.
Well, I went to university, so I can imagine that. Mostly because of all the drinking competitions I was entering into, the amount of weed that I was smoking, and the fact that nothing I learned in university has ever come of practical use in my entire life so far.
Exactly.
I can understand how you could waste an entire year and have nothing to show for it.
But then you know why you end up with a BS degree, right?
Hey, what kind of degree did you get? Oh, I got a BS degree. Oh, that's awesome, bro. See, I was, I didn't like BS, so I dropped out in my second year.
Exactly.
What was the clincher here? Oh yeah. For the first time ever, like I'm a very lazy intellectual. You might have known this, Anne. But I for the first time ever, I actually read source material and did reference notes and went through all these books and everything because the topic really excited me because it was anti-television discourse, and I was like, oh yeah, I could totally write a really wicked essay about how bad television is for everybody. It was the best essay I'd ever written in my life. So naturally, they gave me a D-, and I was like, bro, there is something really messed up with this educational institution where I can write something that, and because of the fact that it was anti-television, which was one of the topics they gave me that I was allowed to do for this essay. There's something wrong with this educational institution, and it's certainly not for me. And I don't think I'll go back. And there's a long list of people throughout history who've made incredible discoveries and done amazing things who are college dropouts.
That's right. look what they said about Edison. Was it Edison or Einstein?
Einstein, I think it was.
One of the two.
Yeah.
They said that he was, like, retarded or something.
Yeah, I think that was definitely Einstein. He wore odd socks and didn't comb his hair. So, obviously, he couldn't be the most brilliant scientist ever. One of the requirements is just dressing like other people, you know, and having no individuality. I mean, what's wrong with this guy?
Mm-hmm.
We've lost the fundamental value of the differences between us, and we've started to think that all the natural occurrences in our lives are unnatural, that they shouldn't occur at all. And we are now on an effort to head off at the past almost any real life experiences, right? Like, this is not good, bro. You're feeling normal, mate. You need a drug. What is this over here? You're trying to distract yourself from reality by vegging out in front of the television, by playing violent video games or anything? Dude, we will make a million more lame TV shows. We will make a billion more lame video games in order to keep that happening. All right? And it's going to be so much easier. We're going to put them right in front of you. And then all the things that used to be good about humanity, used to excite us and inspire us and motivate us to be better people, we get called crazy for even thinking it. We get called heretics for believing in it. We get rejected by society for living the dream.
Right. It's true.
There's an entire broad agenda, and it's no more... Nowhere is it more pronounced than in America, I think. The agenda to destroy humanity, everything that makes us good.
Right.
And it's you can really see it happening.
Really a problem here. Serious, serious problem. I just got back from Hollywood for a movie premiere of a movie that I'm in called American Addict 2, The Big Lie. And, just to see what's going on out there. It's amazing. And that's another reason why I don't watch TV, too, because it's just, well, I don't know, I saw really early on in my life that Hollywood was definitely there to program us to think the way they wanted us to think. Whoever they was, I didn't even know at the time, but to me it was quite obvious that they were programming people. Now, just their whole idea of love, I thought, well, this is kind of crazy because I didn't see that in my parents or their friends or, you know, they were just good friends who loved each other and cared about each other and didn't need all of this other stuff that they said you had to have. It had to be all romantic and all this other crap. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just scary what's going on in society, period.
Yeah.
Because once you learn how somebody thinks, like I had someone that read my book and she came back and she said, oh my gosh, I knew this was a problem, but I didn't realize how far-reaching it went into our society. And it's true. It is so deep. And you get enough people going manic, you're going to crash the whole economy.
And look what's happening to the economy.
I know. And you get... Well, there in Australia, I know we found that they admit 25% of their parliament are on these drugs. I'm sure it's double that here in the U.S.
It would explain the borderline insane decisions they're making.
Exactly. And if you've got somebody that has access to that little red button that can blow the world up, and they happen to be feeling homicidal at the moment, we're in trouble. Look at the plane that went down over in France. 150 people went with him when he started feeling that homicidal ideation from his antidepressants. They said he had a small mountain of antidepressants in his apartment. We saw the same with the Egyptian Air flight. He took 200 with him. He had just been to see his cousin, who was a shrink in L.A. I'm sure he left with some samples.
Is it true that the fluoride compound is used as a binding agent in all these SSRI drugs?
I don't know about all of them, but Prozac alone is like 17% fluoride. There's a whole section in my book about that.
What's the effect of fluoride on the brain?
Not good. That's why Hitler poured it into the water supply before he would take over a country. He knew it would pretty much zone everybody out. And yet, what do we do here? We take our kids to go get fluoride stuck in their mouths by dentists. Or we give them fluoride pills. I had one case that I worked. I helped a mother come off of her Prozac use after like 7 years. And she had already had a couple of children during that time period. It's going to be scary to find out what happened to all those kids. But anyway, she had one that when she was about 3, all of a sudden she couldn't talk anymore. Her speech was very slurred. Nobody could understand her. She was so frustrated, she didn't know what to do. So she brought her over to me and she said, you know, I don't know what's going on. And I said, well, okay, this is one of your children you had while you were on Prozac, right? She said, yes. And I said, okay, is she using fluoridated toothpaste? Is she bathing in fluoridated water? She said, oh my gosh, the dentist just started giving her fluoride tablets. And I said, you can't do that because the fluoride level is going to be way too high because she was exposed to it in the womb. Sure enough, they took her off of the fluoride pills and she could talk again. But another really interesting and very scary thing is she had another baby a year and a half after coming off of 7 years of Prozac. When she began to nurse the baby at 3 weeks, it was passing more blood than it was stool. Both the family physician and the pediatrician agreed that it was the Prozac residue in the mother's milk causing the eating away of the baby's intestinal lining. I had a friend of mine who just recently had a baby too, and she agreed to share her milk with this baby. So even just cutting it in half the mother's and half the friend's milk, the bleeding stopped. So it pretty much confirmed what both doctors said. And nobody's warned about any of this kind of stuff possibly happening down the road. Nobody's being told that. Unless they find my book and read it. Nobody, even the people that are against these drugs, don't go into that kind of detail to find out what's actually happening to the body and the brain. And that's so important. I mean, we're affecting generations with this stuff. Look at all the babies born to those moms that took thalidomide. What are we going to end up with here? We already know there's all kinds of cases being filed for heart damage babies having to have open heart surgery at birth. I've got two friends that happened to. People in my own neighborhood. Their babies both had to have surgery at birth. Both mothers. One was on Paxil, the other on Prozac.
And what about what happens to infants when they're earlier on? There's an enormous vaccine schedule in the United States as well, isn't there? Something like 50 yes. vaccines by the time they're five?
Right. You combine that with the Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil and all the rest. Oh, my God.
It's almost like a miracle that everybody in the United States isn't retarded at this point by all these chemicals and things that are put into it. Of course, a case can be made that a large section of Americans and the IQ dropping sharply. The what was it? Charlotte Isaby, the deliberate dumbing down of America. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have. And the button I mentioned that I wore that said just say no to Prozac, I walked into an office one day and there was a kid there that was like about 16. And he started asking me why I was wearing the button, and I gave him some information and he said, said, you know, when I started on this drug, he was on it. He said, I had an IQ of like 160, and it's now dropped like 20 points or something. It's quite a ways. And he said, and I've been reading these books, and he starts pulling out of his backpack these really thick, heavy-duty medical books. And he said, according to what I'm reading here about serotonin, this drug's going to make me retarded. And I said, you're right. That's exactly what the research shows. I don't know what he ever did. Hopefully he was able to wean himself off okay. I mean, I just bumped into him in an office, but I never forgot that. I thought, this was a bright kid to figure that out on his own at that age. But he had certainly noticed and he was reading the research on his own to find out why. Everybody should do that. Don't rely on your doctor, that's for sure. If you want to know what these drugs do, you have to study it yourself. You have to become an expert. Because most of these doctors know nothing about it. I had one that actually sat down and cried with his patient. What had happened was I knew the kid's parents. When I lived in another state, and so I came back, this was in Utah, and the kid was going to school in Utah, and so I called him and said, you know, your folks want me to call and say hi, and I mentioned to him what I do, and he said, look, I'm on one of these drugs, and my doctor just left on vacation, and I'm out of my pills. So I asked him a whole bunch of questions and I said, you know what? This is really scary. You cannot skip these pills. It's too dangerous. Even the FDA warns that any abrupt change in dose of an antidepressant could cause suicide, hostility, or psychosis. So that's even switching the drug. You can run into that problem. And they said whether you're going up in your dose or down in your dose, it doesn't matter. It can cause all of that if you do it abruptly, which is why for years and years and years and years, we said you got to come off these really, really slowly. I think that's because of the steroid effect that they have. Because anybody knows now that if you're on a steroid, you got to go up really slowly and come down really slowly on those. Anyway, after I asked this young man all these different questions, I said, you're in trouble. you're on the verge of going into serotonin syndrome from everything that I'm hearing from you. I said, there's too many signs there, and you need to call the doctor's office and tell them this. Tell them it's serious and something needs to be done, and you need to get your medication so that you can get back on this and wean the right way. You can't just stop because your doctor's on a vacation. Well, when the doctor came back, he called him in, sat him down, and just started crying. And he said, I am so sorry. I've never heard of serotonin syndrome. He said, you could have died. Isn't that amazing? I mean, these doctors don't know.
They're not warned. And I think it's just somewhere at some point in the 20th century, the profit for the profit motive overcame people's natural tendency to help their fellow man.
Apparently so. I don't understand it. I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, why did you do this? Why have you taken 25 years out of your life and just done this for people? And I say, well, you know what? I could have given everything that I had to my children for an inheritance. But what good is home or any of this stuff that I've lost because I've done this? What good would any of it have done them if they're in a world that they can't live in? You know, I've got kids, I've got grandkids. I don't want the world to go into self-destruct. I want them to be happy and have a life. Doesn't anybody else think of that?
Well, you know, certain generations throughout history have had to basically sacrifice and make the ultimate sacrifice, basically, in order to make sure that the next generation, well, not even the next generation, but the generation just after that, could live without the pain and suffering that they've chose to take on their shoulders, kind of thing. And it's unfortunate when it happens to be your turn, but you have an obligation to act. You don't really have much of a choice in it.
Yeah, I know I had a doctor ask me once, and he's written some books about these drugs. He just said, you know, how do you do this? How do you afford to do this? And I said, well, I just keep mortgaging my house. And he said, I don't think I could talk my wife into that. I mean, his heart was in the right place. He just didn't know. He didn't know that he could sacrifice everything that his family had. And that's the problem we all have. I mean, who's making the money on all of this? They're the drug companies. They're the ones sitting there with everybody's money, blood money. And everyone's left behind trying to get well with nothing left to get well with.
What's painful for a lot of people is that they've got family members who won't believe them, who die soon after, right, when that, you know, their lives could have been spared.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I lost my uncle that way. He ended up with a very fast-moving cancer from the drug. And the last conversation I had with him, he said, I know I've given you a lot of flack for what you do. But he said, don't you ever quit. Never quit, because what's been done to me should be done to no one. I thought, why didn't you listen sooner? But they diagnosed him on a Thursday, and by Wednesday he was dead. So.
Less than a week. Not much time to get your affairs in order.
No, but if Paxil, which is the one that they gave him, can increase breast cancer by 7 times, why can't it increase any other cancer? You know, it's not like the body says, oh, it's Paxil, we can only cause cancer in breast.
What do you do when you have to internalize? What do you do when you have to internalize these kind of, well, basically extremely harsh lessons when it affects you personally? What's the kind of effect on you in terms of how you go about your work or go about your life on a daily basis? Is it a motivation out of fear and angst and trauma, or I don't know what it is. I think it's to a large degree just sort of self-sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I from the beginning, I've put myself in the place of those who are losing their life to these drugs and said, this is their battle. What would they want done? What would I want done if I were in their place? And what I've always heard back is you want to save those people that you love. You want your life not to be in vain. What happened to you couldn't be in vain. People have to learn from what you went through, or it was all for nothing. At least we could give them that much, that their lives have meant something in saving others. And that's what it is that continues to motivate me.
I had a similar motivation myself, actually. I was my car radio busted quite a while ago, and I haven't bothered to get it fixed because the only thing I could listen to it is mainstream talk radio. And fuck that. just drives me nuts. It gives me road rage. And I think what happened to me when I stopped listening to it is I started to spend my time when I was driving thinking about things. And one day I was going over to a mate's place, and the thing I was thinking about is, what do I want to have accomplished after I die? Not while I'm still alive, but after I die, what do I want to accomplish? And it came to me pretty clear that it was just, you know what I want to do? I want some kind of activist, some kind of person who's stopped a whole lot of human death and suffering and or dedicated their lives to the such, to come and speak at my funeral and say that there was this one point in their life where they were so down, they were so miserable and depressed, and they'd had such a hard time trying to save people's lives without being listened to. And then there was this guy, Vinnie Eastwood, who came along, helped me to see that there was a lighter side to genocide, helped me realize that despite my own knowledge of how bad things are, he helped me to see that things aren't really as bad as I think. And he helped me to continue, and I went on to write books, or I helped to save lives, etc. You know, something like that. And then the very next day, a guy who's written several books and gone on hunger strikes about the covert human depopulation measures, Kevin Galilee, typed a message onto my Facebook and said something almost word for word for what I just said to you. Word for word to what I'd thought about myself when I was driving in the car. And it's like, you're on the right track when you know that you're accomplishing in life what you thought you could only do in death.
That's a good point. I've had a lot of people come up to me. You know, I went to a meeting one day and just had a copy of my book sitting in my lap. Didn't even notice that I did or wasn't paying any attention, and because this wasn't about drugs at all. And a guy just across the aisle from me said, great book. And I said, oh, thank you. And he said, did you write it? I said, yeah. He said, that book saved my sister's life. And then he went on about how it helped somebody else. And I have things like that happen a lot. And that is good. That makes me feel good. But it also makes me feel really bad because I know how many others didn't have the information soon enough.
I think sometimes you have to just sort of like sit there and go, at least I'm having some success. If I was having none and people were just dying left, right, and center, regardless of what I do, it'd be extremely demotivating.
Yeah, there's actually an ex-drug rep that's getting a lot of attention that has been speaking out against these drugs. And that comes from an experience that she had where her niece, who was a medical student, was on Effexor. And apparently she was having all kinds of problems with it. She ordered my book and my CD on how to come off. And it was sitting on her desk, not even opened yet, when she poured gasoline on herself and set herself on fire. And the family found the book and, of course, called me, and I helped them as much as I could to see what they could do about filing a lawsuit. But at least her aunt, who was a drug rep, has gotten a whole lot of attention on this issue and spoken out. So the niece's life wasn't in vain anyway. She's done a lot to help a whole lot of people with this. Her name's Gwen Olson. And she's written a book, too. So, you know, it's times like that that you just go, oh my gosh, it was so close. It was just so close to saving your life. And it didn't make it soon enough.
It's those instances, though, and this is the really weird part about human behavior, is sometimes it takes something so horrific like that before we change our lives in a positive way to compensate for it.
Like, people can't understand why I tell them that I'm grateful that I had cancer very early in life. They kind of look at me cross-eyed. They say it's because it taught me the laws of health. I walked away from medicine. I was going to be an MD. I walked away from medicine after what they did to me. I at least knew enough to refuse radiation and chemo, but the surgery nearly killed me. And all it did was spread the cancer. It did nothing good at all. And I just walked away and said, if I'm going to die, I want to do it to peace. I said, if there's another way, I'll find it. If there isn't, at least I'll have a peaceful death. But it taught me laws of health. I changed my life. I changed my diet. I've been healthier the rest of my life than I ever was before in the early years of my life. So to me, it has been worth it. I mean, there's been so many pluses that I can't even tell you. Becoming vegan to get rid of the cancer, got rid of everything else that I had wrong with me. I haven't seen a doctor since I did it. And that was several decades ago. I won't tell you how many, because I'll age myself. But. Anyway.
I was just thinking,
if we learn from things that happen to us in life, you know, we can turn them into pluses.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. I was watching a cartoon, and some dude, like, basically he tried to make a bargain with the devil, basically, and he wanted ultimate knowledge. And when the demon came out, he said, "This here's your ultimate knowledge," and he turned him into an old, frail man in perpetual pain. And he says, "This is the only way for a human being to have ultimate knowledge."
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's what's so bad about these drugs, when you look at that aspect, is they numb you. Actually, if you look at brainwave patterns of somebody on these meds, it shows that they're in a total anesthetic sleep state and dreaming while they talk to you. So if they're designed to stop all pain and suffering, how do you learn anything from what you're going through? They rob you of the lessons in life.
Well, these are the things that we
Not
need to be...
Not just the lessons, the relationships, too.
Yeah. Well, I also thought about a justification for this. You don't have a choice at the end of the day. Something bad happens to you, your choices become very limited. You can either let it destroy you, or you can change who you are in order to... basically, you have to change the way you live your life in order to make the lesson actually be worth it, to have it actually mean something.
Right.
Because otherwise it's just one bad thing that happened to you and you never changed who you are, never did anything different after it happened. And so the most important lessons in my life I've found have always, without exception, been those lessons that have cost me the most.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're so valuable.
Yeah. True. I've had a lot of parents tell me that because they went on these drugs, they never even bonded with their children. You don't bond with anybody, really. And you can see that in our society, too. So many people seem to be incapable of bonding, which is one reason why I've called these the divorce pills forever. I know I had one couple come to me and they said, "Look, our counselor, we're in this group of people going through marital problems and they want all of us to be on an antidepressant. We refuse." The other eight couples all took them. All the others divorced. They were the only couple to stay together because they refused to take the drugs. But if you can't feel anymore, so many assume they've fallen out of love with their mate because they can't feel that love anymore. So it must be that they've fallen out of love with them. And they leave them. They get off the drug, start getting their feelings back, and then they go, "Whoa, what have I done?"
It's like you've lost time and you need to catch up.
Yeah, you talk about the effects on society and it's that basic. It's tearing families apart. There's more families that have fallen victim to these drugs than there are shootings or murder-suicides.
I believe at one point I saw a statistic coming out of the US that suicide had overtaken all other unnatural causes of death as the number one killer.
If not, it's close. Mm. Really close. It's everywhere I turn.
How do you keep up with this? I mean, seriously. I mean, every year, maybe once or twice a year, I have to take several months off, because I can't deal with the emotional crap of just doing this this radio show and hearing about all these horrible things in the world, and just cope with it. You know, I can't. I need to have time away from it. Do you take time away, or have you found other techniques to keep you going?
Well, I tell people to take time away. But my time away is spending time with my puppy or grandkids or, you know, a little bit of time doing those kinds of things, then I'm okay. But I don't know. I can see that the stress has finally, after 25 years of running as fast as I could and hard as I could, starting to catch up. I can see it's my body. It's showing. So I know I've got to take a break.
Sometimes it might take a while, you know, to get yourself back on top. But, you know, once you're back, you feel refreshed and you're really good at it. There was a stat I saw from France, actually, that if you're a French grief counselor or one of those kind of things, you get nearly like 3 months paid leave per year, because they know that otherwise their counselors will just burn out and go nuts, and they'll stop being able to help people get through their traumas because they're going to a traumatized person for help with their trauma.
that makes sense.
You know, we don't take time out anymore. We're starting to think that we've made the mistake that the human body and our minds are not organic. We start to think that we're some kind of machine. Right. Oh, the machine just needs food, or the machine just needs water, or the machine just needs sleep. But it's a complex organic system that has so many ins and outs and so many simultaneously running processes that to treat yourself like a machine will literally destroy the body, whether through anxiety or stress or, you know, any of these other things that are currently messing up our lives on a daily basis are things that we're doing to ourselves because we think that we're not human anymore.
Exactly. I used to do a whole lot of fasting. I've kind of gotten out of that, starting to do it again. It makes all the difference in the world. I refer to the master cleanse, where you go on mainly lemon juice with fresh lemon juice with maple syrup, pure water. Just make up a drink and try to drink only that, or at least have just a salad during the day for a while. It lets your whole body relax. That's one thing, which when you're taking prescription drugs, you can't even do something that simple, because you've got to be eating in order to take your drugs. But that's given me, that helps my whole body to rest and relax. You do that for just a few days, and it's like every cell in your body just relaxes. You sleep like a baby. It feels really, really good. That's probably pretty different for a lot of people, but it's incredible. The Miracle of Fasting by Paul Bragg was one of the best books I ever read.
One of the little techniques that I found is cuteness. You know, we've got these two ducks that have kind of like adopted us. We've just, you know, fed them bread to lure them closer. But they're cute. You know, they waddle around. It's a male and a female, and they look like an old married couple. So I named them Harold and Claudette. And and they're very sweet.
It's true. Animals can give you so much.
Yeah. And also my ginger cat Griffin with his big fluffy lion's mane kind of thing. I just stroke it and he purrs and it's extremely cute. And it kind of makes me feel better.
Exactly. Well, I said my puppies do it for me.
Well, that's why I throw that in there.
And watching the little kids too.
Yep. Same difference, isn't it? It's I don't know what it is about cuteness that's just very therapeutic. Kids are very cute. Animals are very cute. My wife's very cute.
In fact, I've almost always started every lecture I've ever given. I introduce my little dog because she's only like 2 pounds. So I just kind of pull her out of a bag. Because my kid said to me once early on, said, "Gee, Mom, why do people use Prozac when all they need is a puppy?"
Hey, you know how they used to do the what was it, the guns for something exchange or whatever? You could do the Prozac for puppies exchange. turn in your pills, get a puppy.
That's a good point. Yeah, I wish withdrawal was that easy for
them. Yeah. You might wind up doing some very horrific things to that puppy if you just kind of like go cold turkey.
Oh yeah, you don't. Yeah.
Oh well, great. We've just totally derailed this. Oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that sweet kind of conversation that was just going on there for a second? Yeah, and that's life, isn't it? Things get good and then they get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. You learn to cope, and if you don't, it just doesn't work.
Now, can I ask you one last thing before we wrap up the show today? Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see people waking up? Do you see an end to this psychotropic drug nightmare that's currently affecting America?
Well, I've seen that people have begun to wake up. The problem is we've got so many people that are addicted to these drugs that getting them all through withdrawal, it's just massive. And if anything ever happens where they can't get them, whether it's a natural disaster or what, God help us.
I remember my producer once said something like that to me as well. With the amount of people in America that are on SSRI drugs, if the power grid goes out or an EMP or anything like that, and suddenly there's 30, 40, 50, maybe even 100 million Americans who can't get their meds all of a sudden, it'll be just chaos everywhere you look.
No, I've been trying to get out of here.
Well, good luck with that one. Considering under the NDAA, you can now be executed by Barack Obama without a warrant in a foreign country. Isn't that lovely? I'm pretty sure there was there must have been a hand in all those senators and congress people who are on SSRI drugs and that. Oh, this sounds insane. I better pass it. Dearie me.
Well, send everybody to drugawareness.org so they can learn more about these medications and what they really do. There's newsletters from years and years and years.
Yeah. Right, ladies and gentlemen.
The world's just catching up with what we've had out there. So.
Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, if you want some more awareness about drugs, go to drugawareness.org and donate to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime.